Hey everyone, welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for the week of August 29th, and I'm going to be using that system from now on because I don't really know for sure when I'm going to be able to get these edited and uploaded. So for the time being, at least probably through the end of the season, I'll be getting them up either Tuesday or Wednesday as opposed to Monday, just whenever I can get all the stuff to work out correctly. But anyway, my name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com. I'm here along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, what's going on?
I am petting the cat, and she looks ridiculous. She's a longer-haired cat, and I posted a picture or two of her on the site before for just no apparent reason, because she's a cat, and we're always talking about the cat for some stupid reason. But
yes, I have also met this cat. So.
Yes, you know how Shaggy Sammy is.
Uh-huh.
But it has been a very hot past couple weeks here, and she's a very long-haired cat, and she sheds on everything and has been all summer. So finally, I just worked up the gumption and took the cat out to get groomed. And so they gave her, like, a lion cut where, like, the hair on her head stays all long and stuff, and a nice tufted fur at the end of her tail. And then the rest of her is shaved, kind of patchily shaved. It's kind of hard to get around cat's legs like that, and I imagine they squirm and stuff. But, yeah, she is looks ridiculous right now. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's an amusing image. I'm not sure I can quite conjure what it looks like, but
I have pictures. I can send you a picture and you can use it in the post if you want.
Maybe. We'll see. I'll think about it. If there's a picture of a ridiculous looking cat on the blog, then that is the explanation.
You'll understand why, because that's what we do on Purple Row. We get off topic and talk about cats.
I think the whole internet does this, does it not?
Yeah, that's like the source of all internet entertainment.
You know, I don't really watch cat videos. I'm not really into them. And yet, it somehow recommends them for me on YouTube all the time. If I look at my recommended videos, which are supposedly dictated by similarities based on tags or authors and so forth of what you actually watch, apparently it's just trying to get me to watch all the cat videos.
Sometimes you gotta watch cat videos, I guess.
Sometimes you do.
I mean, as much as the internet loves its cats, this cat, I'm not really a cat person in general, but this one kind of takes the cake. She's pretty friendly and pretty special, so
It's generally a little bit more difficult to find a cat that's not at least a little friendly, but they are very independent, and I think a lot of people take that as being unfriendly, maybe a little bit reclusive.
Yeah, I could get there.
But my whole family is cat people, so I've been around cats all the time, and I've never met one yet that is evil. Maybe a little bit, but not like, I'm going to bite your leg evil, or anything like that.
Oh no, it's just the unfriendliness thing. But whatever. We should probably get in with the show, because I don't think people care that much about the cat.
Okay. I do, but whatever. Let's move on then to, we took 1 week off. Andrew seems to think that we missed quite a few important topics. I'm not quite so certain on that, but you did go to Alex White's debut, and I thought maybe you could just spend like, you know, 3 or 5 minutes or so just describing what your impressions were of that game. Even though it's a week old now, it's still at least somewhat mildly relevant, not only to right now, but next season. So, fire away.
Well, no, Alex White was he had a very encouraging debut. He struck out 4, only walked 1. That was a good start. He got, I think, like 12 or 13 ground balls, 9 ground ball outs. But in the third inning, he got kind of hosed by the defense by just the sheer bad luck of where ground balls like to go. Very Aaron Cook-esque in that regard. And, well, the thing is, he was looking good. He was having guys on both sides of the plates reaching. What else to say? I mean, the way some of his pitchers would just dive in on batter's feet, it looked like his stuff was a lot nastier than the actual box score shows. He did make those 2 mistake pitches, which led to home runs, which sucked because, well, home runs suck. But they really were mistake pitches. The majority of his 6 innings of work, he really had the Astros off. And granted, it's the Astros, so we don't want to, you know, try to take too much out of a young pitcher going up against the worst team in baseball. But, you know, as far as just trying to scout him goes, he had them off balance. He had them rolling over his pitches. He, you know, they only had a handful of balls get past the outfield, or the infield, I should say, and those two that got past the outfield
as well. I was going to say that was actually an accurate statement as well.
Yeah, but he looked really, really promising. And four strikeouts over six innings, while it isn't fantastic, that's like a league average strikeout rate, you know, four per six innings, something like that. Like, you know, rolls out to six per nine innings. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of it's better strikeout rate than Aaron Cook. It's not quite a, you know, Brandon Webb-esque just yet, but remember, the guy's only had one start with the Rockies. The ground balls are the most encouraging part for me, and the fact that he has people guessing on his pitches. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he does when he faces the Diamondbacks.
Which will have probably happened by the time people are listening to this.
Well, hopefully they'll be able to, you know, he'll have done more of the same so we can confirm, our findings, but there's a lot of good to look at there. He didn't look too, I mean, the best part is he didn't look rattled by the big nasty inning of errors and poor defense and bad luck. He looked very, he kept his cool about it. He was able to keep, pitching through it, making his pitches, getting the hitters to guess on stuff, getting the more ground balls, things of those, of that nature. And, you know, ultimately it was all right. It ended up being just like, again, despite the fact that he let like five runs across, it was a promising start.
That's good, and it's good that you mentioned composure, because I didn't get to see the game, and I wasn't really, I mean, I obviously would have no real idea of exactly what kind of personality or demeanor he carried while on the mound out there, and I knew he did have one kind of icky inning there, and it's always nice to see when a young player like that is able to remain calm and deal with that sort of thing. We had that. Go ahead.
Especially when you look at the nature of the way that the inning unfolded. I mean, Tulowitzki had a 6-3. It was a deep in the hole put-up, but it's the kind of put-up that Tulowitzki always makes, and he didn't make it, which is surprising enough in itself that Tulowitzki didn't make the out. But it was a really, really close call from where we were sitting, and granted, it was we were like on third tier to the first base side of home plate, but right up against the rail, not like the top rail where you're, you know, looking over the catwalk there from the tunnels, but rather the rail that actually, you know, hangs over the field where all the foul balls go and stuff like that. We didn't get any foul balls, which would have been kind of cool if we did. But where we are sitting, we had a pretty clear view of things. It was actually a great spot to watch a right-handed pitcher work. You could kind of watch his follow through really well. I mean, it would have been good to see any pitcher from right there. But from where we are sitting, the first play did look like the batter was out. But then again, we're also looking through our home field vision there. So right. That happened. And then there's an infield single is where a bouncer came back to wipe, but it was just a bit too hard for him to just field and throw. He went and stabbed for it, bounced it off his glove, and there was just no way that Tulowitzki could get to it after that and make the play. So runs on first and second, and there's a line drive single in there somewhere that legitimately scored a run, and then a botched Chris Nelson double play that he just basically booted the ball once he got to it. And then finally, a Tulo Herrera double play that finished the whole thing off. And again, it was a lot of those, like, you know, we had a German family sitting behind us. And I think that was the first baseball game they'd ever been to. And so we're sitting there almost apologizing for the miserable play they're saying. Essentially saying, this isn't baseball. You're kind of seeing baseball. But the Astros are bad and the Rockies are playing uncharacteristically bad.
Yeah, how much do you think they understood what they were watching?
They had a good handle on things.
They were able to recognize that there was bad play going on.
Well, kind of. I mean, it might be one of those things where you don't catch all the nuances of it, but the dad was, you know, the entire family was chatting in German back and forth, but the dad, I mean, you could catch words like strikeout, Tulowitzki, things like that, which are pretty funny to hear, you know. It mixed into German, the German language. And the guy, they clearly knew what they were looking at. Like, you know, a flare single to left field, you know, that fell into no man's land. You could hear the dad cheering for it and knowing exactly when to cheer right and stuff like that. So at least he knew what was going on. And so we turned around and kind of explained. It was a crazy game for this family to see, too, because, I mean, it was Alex White's debut. You just saw some, like, just uncharacteristically bad play from the Rockies. And then they also had the thing that happened, and I think it was the seventh or eighth, where the lineup that day had Cargo, then Tulo, then Helton, then Smith. So three lefties out of four. Mm-hmm. They brought in a lefty, got Cargo out, brought in a righty, got Tulo out, and then brought the same lefty back to face Helton and Smith. They actually stowed that that fielder in right field, where a right-handed hitter's not really going to get to him. And then they put they double switched with the right fielder.
That was Wesley Wright, yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. And then I believe it was David Carpenter, I believe his name was, that came in to face Tulowitzki. But one of those things that I've always wanted to see happen in Major League Baseball, and I'm glad I was actually there for it. But they just saw this bizarre, like Seth Smith hit that, like, just mammoth home run that, you know, hit the second deck, advertising scoreboard. Just a ridiculous home run. And Johnny Herrera hit a home run. I'm thinking these people, they don't know what they're watching, but they're seeing an incredible game right now. I mean, just as far as absurdity goes, miserable defense, Herrera home runs, double switchings with pitchers staying in the field and stuff. Oh man, just awesome.
Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten that all this happened in the same game. I haven't been able to watch very many, so I kind of separated all these into separate, like, events in my head as if, all of these things had happened over a series maybe, but that was one crazy game. Going back to what I was saying about composure in young pitchers, let's take a brief tangent here and talk about the Esmil Rogers balk. Something,
sweet Moses.
It was something we didn't really talk about when we were planning to on what to talk about for the recording, but it did remind me of it, and I thought it was worth bringing up. Now, You would probably, again, this is actually something that I did see when it happened. This time I actually was watching the game. Did it appear to you as though that was an actual, I'm not talking about the Matt Reynolds one here because I think that was the correct call.
But, I thought that was a pretty iffy call. You gotta be looking for a balk on that Reynolds one. But anyways, I will be honest, I was listening to it as I was in transit, and I got to hear Jack Corrigan saying it was crap. And then after the game was over, I waited for the archive game to come out and watched it on MLB TV. And I already had my opinion pretty much influenced by everyone else's reactions. And then I, you know, summarily wrote said opinion on the site as part of the game wrap. But yeah, I did not see a balk. There's nothing in the rules that you can't look at his motion never changed. He never flinched. He never dropped his foot. Nothing like that. I mean, he didn't do anything crazy at all. He just, in the middle of his motion, looked at third base to make sure that Miles wasn't heading for home, and then made his pitch, and they called that a balk. And honestly, with Bob Davidson, I'm not sure if you really want to get into, if you're looking more to get into pitcher composure discussion here, or umpires are ridiculous discussion here, but
anywhere this discussion goes is fine.
But honestly, with Davidson making that call, it's just infuriating because the man, he is the problem with Major League umpires today. It's not just the fact that umpires, a lot of the problem with Major League officiating in general is their reluctance to try to incorporate new and well-tested technology. Not to say that baseball's had all that much experience testing the new technology, but if you look at the other major three sports, there's replay stuff going on all over the place, especially in the NFL, but hockey has it too, and given how tradition-oriented hockey is, considering that the NHL and the Major League Baseball are the two oldest leagues in North America as far as, you know, the major four sports there, I'm amazed that the NHL has been able to get all this technology incorporated into their game without much more lashback. For example, if you got a disputed goal, they will phone it into Toronto, and they will get on the line with Toronto and have a discussion with the referees in Toronto who are watching, who have all the angles, who will then say, yes, it was a goal, or no, it was not a goal. And we are sometimes it takes a little while because it's a really questionable goal. But for the most part, it's just verifying what the referee already called or, you know, but it's not that long of a thing. But everyone's afraid that if the umpires have to go and check into the replay, it's going to happen a dozen times a game, and the game is going to take 5 hours apiece and stuff like that. Now, they have I'm getting off on a bad tangent here. There's going to be ways to incorporate things like instant replay into baseball and we're just all afraid of change. We're always afraid of change as baseball people. It just seems to be the way things go. And Bob Davidson is one of these people that is not helping the game out in any way, shape, or form. One of the biggest beefs that people have with the NBA, with professional football, not so much with hockey, but it gets, you wonder sometimes, is that the sports are becoming ref ball, especially in the NBA. The last couple minutes of the game, you're not playing the game anymore. You're playing the clock and you're playing the ref. And that's what makes it so frustrating for people to watch. But then we see things like, you know, Bob Davidson, where it's not only, it's not that the players are playing playing the umpires or not trying to play the umpires. It's the fact that Davidson and Joe West and, the recently retired Bruce Fleming are the kind of people who need to insert themselves into the games. You'll recall back, when Milt Pappas for the Cubs was throwing his perfect game, and last batter of the game, Bob Davidson, you know, says that Pappas walked him, and, you know, even the batter was kind of a little shaky about it. The catcher was saying, I don't know what he saw, but those balls that he called were strikes in the seventh inning or whenever. Keep carrying forward. There's a lot of allegations that Bruce Fleming was smirking after the walk, basically saying, that's right, I have the power to screw up your perfect game. Who do you think you are? And that debate, that bad blood still lingers. There's no question about that. So you fast forward to today, you know, there is no more Bruce Fleming as he, you know, mercifully retired, but with someone like Davidson. A couple weeks ago, Mike Quadi with the Chicago Cubs, Tyler Colvin was at bat and struck out in a called third strike. So as he's walking back to the dugout, he's expressing his frustration. He's not facing Davidson. He's not addressing Davidson. He's just frustrated, and Davidson decided to follow him. Mm-hmm. Walking toward Colvin as he's walking toward the dugout,
which is essentially, in other words, just trying to pick a fight.
Exactly. That's exactly what Davidson was doing. And he got and then he said, I don't like what Colvin's saying, toss him out of the game. And so naturally, Mike Quadi, the manager of the Cubs, comes running out to defend his player, as well he should. And Quadi, I've seen the replays of it. Granted, I can't hear what he said. But he kept his composure. He didn't have an aggressive posture, didn't use aggressive body language at all, had his hands out to the side with his palms open, effectively saying, I don't understand this, can you please fill me? I mean, I'm trying to smooth this over. And Davidson did not like the way that Quadi was saying things. And like I said, because he couldn't actually hear the conversation, Mike Quadi could have been calling him every profanity in the book just with good body language. I don't know. But the way Quadi was handling the situation did not call for him to be ejected, and then Davidson ejected him. And we saw something similar again with the Rockies during the Brewers series. Corey Hart out home plate by about 3 feet, and yet the umpire calls him safe. Iannetta throws a fit, and as well he should, and any veteran umpire knows you gotta give the players a chance to be frustrated, even if if they cross the line, yeah, give them the boot. But, I mean, like, he gave Iannetta no time to even.
No, it was instantaneous. I actually do remember that. It was like the second there was any challenge to the umpire's skill or ability to call the play correctly, it was an instantaneous mistake, and it was punishable by an ejection.
Yeah, it was very suspicious. The minute he called him safe, and I forgot the umpire's name. I don't know if you recall it. I had to look it up. But the minute the umpire called Corey Hart safe, Iannetta spiked his mask and effectively yelled, no. And, you have to be a pretty good lip reader to see what he was saying from there. But proceeded to basically say, you know, no, there's no way I had him by a mile, blah, 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 whatever he said. And the umpire tosses him. And the minute he tosses him, this is the best explosion ever from Iannetta. And we've probably talked about this on the podcast, so sorry for rehashing things. But Iannetta, you know, then very visibly drops the F-bomb, cursing at the umpire, tells him exactly where he can stick his call, so on and so forth. Tracy comes out, gets tossed himself. They were livid, as well they should be. And after the game, they were, you know, Ringlesby and Helmer and Houston and them were on the umpire, but they weren't saying it like this umpire's terrible and needs to be out of Major League Baseball forever. They were saying he's clearly new to this game. You gotta give the players their right. They have their right to vent a little bit. You can't, if they cross the line, toss them, but you gotta give them, you know, at least a little bit of arguing there, a little bit of yelling.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between that and Davidson is this guy's obviously new. trying to assert himself as someone not to be messed with, just because I'm new, you can't go and walk all over me, that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
But with Davidson, like, I've never heard Jeff Corrigan lose his cool like that. I mean, he wasn't necessarily saying, he wasn't making personal attacks at Bob Davidson, saying he was an awful human being, or I hope his house burns down, or, you know, whatever. He was saying, you know, Bob Davidson is an umpire that is inserting himself into baseball games, intentionally trying to change the outcome. Whatever team it's for, he's trying to make himself a very visible part of the game, and he needs to be out of baseball. Nobody pays to see umpires. I'm sorry. And that's only kind of true for me, because I will definitely go watch Jim Joyce be the home plate umpire because I love his obnoxious straight call. But in the case of this, this is, I mean, Jim Joyce is not the same type of umpire as Bob Davidson. And maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe back when he first started out, this is how umpires behaved all the time. But fans don't want to see that now. And there's a lot of money tied up in Major League Baseball. And they need to do something. They need to do something about this kind of action. Because there was no, but you had to be itching to call a balk. If you call a balk on Ismael Rogers there. Now, as for the actual outcome of the game, you could put the rest of that on Ismael Rogers, on Jim Tracy, on the Rockies in general, because
it's just kind of where I was going with the composure thing.
You have a rattled pitcher at that
point. He was more rattled. I mean, he was the definition of rattled. Like, you can almost imagine, like, somebody who is maybe a little rattled, getting mad, maybe, stepping away for a little bit. Which Rogers did, but he did something that really struck me, and I've never really seen a pitcher do this before. He was so confused and upset by what was going on, he actually sat down on the ground, looking off into the middle of nowhere for like a minute and a half. And it looked like, at that point, there was absolutely no way you could expect him to be attached to the game. He completely zoned out. Well, and, I mean, it was almost scarily predictable that he was not going to be able to reinsert himself into the proper mindset. He just said, I don't know if it was conscious or not, or just a reaction, but he just decided to zone out and separate himself.
Well, look at it this way. Ismael Rogers is a guy who can see the writing on the wall as far as the future of this team. He knows that Drew Pomeranz and Alex White are going to be the future of this rotation. He knows that when De La Rosa is back, when Nicasio is back, that his rotation spot is going to be in major danger. So he is pitching his brains out. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, you should have just pulled him after the six innings. The six innings of good Ismael Rogers is as good as you can ever expect. But Rogers is trying to pitch well enough to say, hey, look, my job shouldn't be the one in danger. It should be, you know, Aaron Cooks. It should be, you know, just anyone but me. And he gets just destroyed by an umpire like that. I mean, he's at the near the end of a good outing. He's already, you know, he's trying to put whatever he has left into this game. And then the umpire calls a borderline phantom balk on him. Like, almost nothing to even construe as a balk. I mean, first of all, you got to be angry at the situation, but secondly, now you got to think, okay, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do differently now?
Absolutely.
And with that in your head there, because you've been pitching great this whole game and all. I mean, this isn't like Morales, who had a definite balk move. This is Rogers, who's never really been in that kind of trouble before. And you, I mean, the amount of some. Jack Corrigan is actually calling you for a break, you know, wishes he had the availability of a breakdown of how many balks are called by other crews as compared to how many are called by
Bob Davidson's crew.
Bob Davidson's crew, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I've mentioned earlier, look, I'm not gonna pretend I'm as skilled as a major league umpire. When it came to the Reynolds thing, it's suspicious because there was just a balk called before and people were saying that, I think it was Hunter Wendelstad, is that how you say his name? Who called the second one? People were saying that he was trying to protect Bob Davidson with that call, which doesn't really make sense to me. But it looked to me like he stepped more towards the plate than the base. So that's why it seemed to me that I didn't really have a problem with that call. And as I recall, Tracy actually said that it was that balk that got Tracy tossed. He actually said that he thought it was the correct call. On the second one I'm talking about. But I've watched that Rogers incident, you know, not over and over, but maybe four or five times, and I can't really see. And I mean, perhaps his rhythm was a little different than usual, but that's not really a balk. That's just slightly slower pitching motion due to him checking the runner.
I have a lot of trouble with if it's a sort of balk, that's not a balk.
Right.
Give me a break here. And that, just not acceptable. And
especially since most of the other umpires in baseball would not have called anything at that
precisely.
Point. Yeah, it was an instance of a specific umpire in a specific situation making that decision, which is not the way officiating is supposed to be. And look, I mean, I understand that there's other angles to look at this. I understand that in some cases it's difficult on the umpires because some of the rules are so subjective, and that includes the balk in some cases. But this guy has a history of calling these weird balks. And so, I mean, if it were somebody else who doesn't do this as often and maybe had called it a balk, the situation, you know, still would have been absurd, but it might have been, you know, more innocent to some degree. Mm-hmm. But this was, it's just an example of just like you were saying, of somebody who is trying to steer the direction of the game in a specific way, which is certainly disconcerting about the way that the umpires are managing themselves. And I mean, I find myself defending the umpires a lot because I feel like a lot of times we see not just people on our blog, but people all over baseball very quick to pounce on umpires who, in more cases than not, I believe, are just trying to do their job correctly.
Well, and that's the thing for sports. You don't like the call, you're gonna jump on the umpire.
Yeah, and they're just an easy scapegoat is the problem. And so I'm often trying to help people empathize with the officiator who was probably trying to, do the best they could, but that's just not always the way it goes.
I jump in there too. Like, I'm one of the few people who does like the human element of the game, sort of. If we're talking egregiously blown calls, like, 2 years ago in the ALCS with the fair ball or the foul ball that was a foot fair and so on and so forth, things like that. That are just inexcusable. Like, there's only so much that I'm willing to let fly, and that is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Something like balls and strikes. I don't know. I mean, I do think, and a lot of people, like of my dad's generation, do still appreciate the idea of if the ump's calling a low zone, as long as it's a consistent zone, it's not a big deal. Things of that nature. Whereas I'm much more along the lines of let's make sure we have a consistent zone no matter what. So, you know, crap like catchers framing pitches and stuff like that isn't an active part of the game, but rather, you know, just something that's irrelevant and outdated.
Right.
I see no reason for pitchers to, or for catchers to have to sell the ump on a strike when it's a strike. If it's a ball, then it's a ball. That's kind of where it comes down to for me.
Right.
So, I mean, really, we're talking about arguing umpires making regular mistakes, if that makes any sense, versus Davidson and, you know, trying to change the outcome of a game. We're talking about two different things, and I do believe that the latter is simply inexcusable.
Gotcha. Now, my father had an interesting conspiracy theory, if you will, that because Bob Davidson is a Denver local, he may, or maybe not Denver, he's Colorado somewhere.
He lives in Littleton.
Okay. So metro area, basically. That he might be, overcompensating for bias for the Rockies by specifically trying to, call worse calls for the Rockies in order to avoid the accusation of bias when in fact that is in fact actually bias. I don't know any real history of Bob Davidson, but does it seem like he's just generally like this?
He's generally like that. He's a bit, I mean, look at the game I mentioned earlier, the Cubs Pirates game.
Right.
Davidson, there's nothing Rockies involved there, and he was being a big blowhard trying to change the game.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there is some merit to it. I don't mean to just shoot down people who suggest that he's trying to dispel any notion of a bias, but there's got to be a better way to do it if that is the case. Well, and you, if that is, I mean,
that was my reaction too. That's basically what I said. That doesn't make sense. But then again, you have to remember that a lot of people don't make sense.
True.
You know,
this is an umpire at the pinnacle of umpiring in Major League Baseball. If you're really caught up with something like that, you're probably in the wrong position. If you cannot get over the idea of not being biased toward the team in the town where you live.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Well, no, I agree with you completely. And I was basically saying, I mean, he's not the only umpire who came from who certainly probably grew up loving baseball and therefore probably had a team they liked. And it's the same with players too. Baseball players obviously come during the draft from all over the country and, obviously from the amateur signings all over the world where they get different exposure to different American teams and so on and so forth. And, you know, I can't recall any cases where there was like some sort of weird loyalty issue where like some player got drafted by a team and then was unable to play against their favorite hometown team or something like that.
No, I mean, when they talked to Trevor Story, he even said, you know, he grew up being a Yankees fan or whatever, but seeing how he's with the Rockies, now he's all Rockies. Not happening.
Yeah,
just not happening.
And there are a lot of minor leaguers in our system, especially on Twitter, who like to discuss that same thing. That I think Andrew Fisher has on more than one occasion asked minor leaguers, not just in interview, but just casually, what their thoughts are on their hometown teams versus the Rockies, and it's also important to point out, at least in our case, and I'm sure this is the case with most teams, at least to some degree, that a lot of the players who have joined the team, pitched their heart out, but didn't make it, and have been released or left as a free agent and their baseball careers kind of died there, they still maintain a connection to the system and have gained an interest in a long-term sort of fandom for them. And it just suggests to me that if it's that easy for somebody who is literally on the field in a competitive environment, can that easily realign their loyalties, it's no excuse whatsoever if there is an umpire who can't separate themselves from their subjective loyalty to a team, and that includes by overcompensating and punishing them more than they would someone else just to try and adjust those levels correctly.
Well,
it just doesn't make sense.
The most frustrating part about this one, to move off the topic a little bit here, is the fact that the Rockies were on a nice 5-game winning streak at that point, and then to have it taken away by something like Bob Davidson, that just makes it that much more angering. Like, that kind of shot the momentum of the season. So, you know, there's a lot you could say about, oh, well, the Rockies season is probably done anyways, but we've seen magic happen before. And,
well, yeah, and of course,
stuff like that.
We also don't know if we would have won that game anyway.
No, true. It was a 1-0 game.
Yeah.
There's no reason to necessarily and rationally think that Esmiel Rogers, him of like the career 6 ERA or something like that, was going to hold on for the remainder of the ball game. But the fact was, the score was not 6-1 when Rogers was in the game.
Right.
It became that way after this, you know, he got out of that inning like twice, I think. And if not him, then Matt Reynolds got out of the inning by getting Justin Sellers hung up at second. Picked off in what was ultimately dubbed the second balk. And that's what's so frustrating is to see, when it comes down to such pivotal points of the game, and suddenly the umpiring crew is like, oh, we're going to get very balk heavy. We're going to be really, really watching the pitchers, you know, front foot falling. Where were you the rest of the game? I mean, if it just takes till now for you guys to catch stuff like this, Something's going on there if you guys are just now catching these calls. Be consistent. That's one thing that everybody will probably agree on. If you want instant replay, if you want computerized umpires, whatever, as long as we're stuck in this system, people will at least kind of shut up if the umpire is consistent. This was not consistency. This was, hey, the game's at its tightest point. Let's start making ticky-tack calls.
Yep. No, I definitely agree, at least when it comes to the Rodgers call for sure. And, you know, I am kind of tired of thinking of trying to specifically nail down any sort of motivation. I just think that either way, it's pretty shoddy. And, I mean, we've had, since I started following baseball, every season, three or four times, somebody calls for, you know, the grand changing of the guard of the umpire, whether it be for a further lean towards technology or whether it just be a complete overhaul of the mentality these guys have, if it comes from their, I know very little about how the umpires, like, system works. I don't know how they're hired or how they're found or anything like that.
Well, you have to go through an umpire training camp. You see that advertised here and there during major league broadcasts and things of that nature. Go to umpiring camp. Do you have what it takes? And then they have to work their way through the minors too. Like, one route you can do is a lot of people start by umpiring, you know, kids ball, little league ball, you know, Babe Ruth league, stuff like that. And then just work their way up through there towards, you know, bigger tournaments and things along those lines, and then hopefully they get noticed by someone during the tournament, and they get a shot to, you know, join the minor leagues, you know, join the, or maybe even the independent league or something like that, who need umpires. And so then, I actually have a book, it's called As They See Him in the World of an Umpire. And
I've heard that book mentioned before, yeah.
It's across the room, and I haven't read it all the way through yet, but it's an interesting look that, you know, umpires' life isn't a very celebrity life. It's the most thankless job in Major League Baseball, and, you know, other sob story-esque things. And I don't mean to, you know, deny them of the fact that their job is hard and they don't get a lot of accolades for it. I mean, who asked for the umpire's autograph? But at the same time, you gotta know what you're signing up for.
Yeah.
And you can't go and take those liberties like Davidson and, you know, other umpires like Joe West tend to do.